It's Jennifer Diane Gostin, and welcome to Once Upon a Time in Adoptee Land. After connecting with the adoption community over a decade ago, I recognized the added value adoptees bring to a conversation about adoption. In this bonus episode, you'll hear about taking agency of one's life as an adult and how choosing to be adopted can be an empowering life decision. When I consider the overall subject of adoption and all the different ways it can and does present in the world, I can't help but think of its bigness. It can look vastly different from the circumstances of adoptees who have been separated from their family of origin at birth, their beginnings being unknown to them, and having no connection to biological family, or having to navigate being away from their tribe to live with strangers. Still, hearing other stories can empower adoptees to take agency, especially in reunion with biological family members. With that being said, today's guest, to bring a close to season 10, is an adopted person who decided as an adult to add a parent and not subtract one through adoption. Her name is Ava Aspiralis. She's always known her biological parents and was never relinquished at birth. What struck me the most about Ava's journey is she models what it looks like to take agency of one's life. I've had at least one guest and heard of other adoptees who, once in reunion with their biological mother, made the decision to reverse the adoption. Together, they agreed that their birth mother legally adopt them. I invite you to remain open to hearing something different, another side of being an adoptee from Ava, without the temptation to compare it to the relinquishment and adoption experiences expressed by other adopted people, especially me. Yes, this conversation I would label atypical to my intentions for this podcast, and trust you'll find it meaningful and enjoyable just the same, though your lived experience might be shrouded in layers of loss not found in Ava's story. Allow me to introduce you to a person who was raised in South London by her American mother and Cypriot stepfather, who in adulthood adopted her. She now lives in Nicosia with her partner and is the author of two contemporary fiction novels. I find her to be a lovely young woman navigating her way in life, sooner rather than later, to what feels best for her as it relates to family. I am just really excited to talk to you today because in our prior conversation, I just felt such warmth coming from you as you shared with me a part of your story. And I want the listeners to know you were raised in South London by your American mother and stepfather, who is from Cyprus. And that's where you're joining me from now. You're in Cyprus. I'm in the States. And I had to go to the map and look up exactly where Cyprus was to recall. And it is in the Middle East. And your stepfather subsequently adopted you. And you now live in Nicosia with your partner and the author of two contemporary fiction novels. So yeah, I'm thrilled to have you as a guest on Once Upon a Time in Adoptee Land. And tell me, how are you doing today?
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for having me. I'm really, really happy to be here. As you said, I'm in Nicosia in Cyprus. I'm here with my partner, and we came here, I think, close to 3 years ago now. And my parents moved at the same time as me, my mom, biological mom, and at the time, my stepdad. And he adopted me when I was 21 in Cyprus, the first year that we arrived. So yeah, I'm very new to this community, really.
Well, I'm happy to know that you're a part of the community. And I'm going to give a little backstory so my listeners can better understand why I wanted you as a guest. And this will probably be a bonus episode, which is a time where I allow space for conversations and things that may be a little bit different than what the podcast is about, because my listeners primarily are adopted people, such as myself, separated from our biological family, both sides, and in my case, a closed system where I would not have any idea of my family of origin. So mother, father, nobody. My listeners and I come from a place where we know we need the support of other adopted people who can identify with many of these things that we've experienced so that we don't feel alone. So I'm going back to a backstory because I think it lays the foundation for why I think it's important to hear from people like you. A few years ago, I was in a Zoom meeting, and it was primarily transracial, interracial adoptees, which I am not. I'm a same-race domestic adoptees. But I remembered how warmly I was received and included, though my experience as an adopted person was very different from theirs. And fast forward in that meeting, the question came up about an adopted person whose story resembles yours. She knew her biological mother, she knew her biological father, and somewhere during her life, her young adult life, she was adopted by a step-parent, and she wanted to participate in the group with all of us. Some of the members of that group felt that our meeting would not best serve her needs because her situation was different, and I remember thinking we should include her. Because number one, she is adopted, and though her situation looks different, there's a good chance that we could learn something. And certainly, if we can support her, I was willing to do that. I say all that to say that I was included in a group who identified a lot different in their experience as an adopted person, and that felt good. So I would imagine any adopted person, no matter what it looks like, the details of it, would feel good to be included with other members of the community where it looks a little different. Today is an opportunity for me to learn something and hopefully the listeners to learn something. And one place I really wanted to start is something you told me that touched me deeply. When you said that adding a parent is how you looked at it when your stepfather adopted you, was not about replacing a parent. And when you said those words to me, it resonated because a lot of adoptees, especially when we embark upon reunion with our biological family, we want that message to be known to our adoptive parents, right? It's not at all about replacing you. It's about adding. I really appreciate your words. And I think when you speak about that, it will help adoptees that are kind of dealing with that. Sometimes it's called dual loyalties. You'll give us some guidance on how your perspective on that has been. So wherever you want to start, however much you want to share, would be great.
Thank you for sharing that story, first of all, because I am aware, just from the few conversations I've kind of had in this area so far, that there are some divisions, kind of, or not divisions, but different points of view, which can feel quite polarized within the adoption space, and whether that's between adoptees and adoptive parents, and kind of feelings on both sides around not the rights of the participants, but kind of, I don't know, almost where the decision making should begin and end for each party involved in that, if that makes sense. I think it's difficult for me to kind of say, I'm here, I'm adopted, I'm the same as all of you, when I think some people feel that their experience is kind of more than mine, and I can completely understand why. But like you say, I think it is just different, and I think I have so much to learn from other people in the community whose early life looked very different to mine. As much as the other way around. And So I'm as much here and involved in these conversations to listen as I am to speak about anything, first of all. But yeah, I have to say it surprised me initially how much of a divide I kind of did notice between adoptees and adoptive parents, because I think where being adopted was my choice, and that's kind of the key difference between me and many others, it felt overwhelmingly positive. And so I wouldn't have made that connection on my own to kind of having any ill feeling about the situation, if that makes sense. And so, yeah, I think unlike many adoptees, I was lucky to grow up knowing where I had come from biologically too. I should say my biological parents met in America. My mum is originally from Rhode Island and my biological dad was British. And he was traveling America on the Greyhound, I believe, the bus. And they met and they dated for a few months and it was kind of this whirlwind thing. So they got married so that she could go back to the UK with him. And then they had split before I was born. So I grew up primarily with my biological mum, and then my stepdad was kind of on the scene before I could remember. So I only ever remember him being in the house with us and that being kind of my primary unit. I can't imagine my life without him. And I think while I did have my biological dad in the picture up to a point, I feel that George, my at the time stepdad, was the one who raised me and who instilled me with the values that I have now. You know, who was there when I was sick and when I was sad and through everything that you go through as a young person. So yeah, so that's kind of the early stages of our relationship.
Yeah, I'm thinking about something you said. You had the choice. Tell me a little bit more about that. You having the choice to be adopted and you choosing that.
It was something that we wanted to do for a number of years, and we held off initially because in the UK, and I'm quoting my parents here, so I'm not a lawyer, I would have had to essentially be signed off by my biological dad in order for my then stepdad to adopt me, which we knew was not going to go down well at all, and it kind of wasn't worth opening that conversation. And so we waited and we moved to Cyprus again when I was 21. The laws here are that there isn't actually an age restriction on adopting people, I think. And so we were able to do that here without me having to be relinquished, you know, kind of officially by one parent in order for another to take on that role. And so as much as I was older and it wasn't necessarily kind of any statement of someone being a guardian in the sense that they would if you were a child, it was really fulfilling for me because it just felt like it was validating the relationship that I felt I had with this person.
Thank you for that. Yeah. Validation is really important too. And I've heard a foster parent say that for her, it felt like it was grounding and gave her a sense of being stable. Her situation, similar to yours, she was adopted by her stepfather well into adulthood. I think she might have even been close to 40 years old. And what it did for her was make her feel stable. And she even was very transparent in sharing that for years, she would not have thought that. You know, he was her stepfather. He was this amazing man that raised her, and that was enough. And then she would later feel differently and feel very empowered by having the adoption take place. So I think this is like a really important conversation because I often think adopted people like myself wonder, like, why did I have to be separated from my original family? I wish that didn't happen, or I wish I knew more to my beginnings, like all of that. And at the same time, there's something about, of course, being in a position to choose to be adopted is very different. But there's something about the adoption taking place to symbolize, yeah, I think that's what I want to say, symbolize how important this person is to you in your life. Would you say that is how it feels for you?
Absolutely. I think that's spot on. I mean, you know how you feel about someone, and like you were kind of saying, it does feel like that's enough up to a point. And then I think you reach a stage as an older person, at least for me, kind of taking stock of things and looking back over childhood and adolescence and thinking, well, actually, who was the one that was always there? Who was the one that was just solid and selfless? I understand also there's a lot of arguments around kind of nature and nurture, and just I understand, again, everyone will have their own feelings on it. But for me, I feel very strongly that the person I am is because of who I was raised by. There is also a cultural element to that. You know, I said that my adopted dad, my stepdad previously, is from Cyprus, and I've ended up here. Clearly, I have a very, very strong connection to this country. And I can remember being a child and saying, you know, I'm from Cyprus, I'm Cypriot. And I have always felt that through my entire life. And I don't know, I think I feel much more at peace with saying that too now that I'm adopted, because coming here and, you know, people will ask you, where are you from? Why are you in Cyprus? And I would say, oh, well, I'm Cypriot. My stepdad is Cypriot. And Cypriots are quite direct people a lot of times. So sometimes they would just look at me and say, oh, you don't look like you're from here, or kind of, you know, something like that, because I don't. I'm pale and I have blue eyes, which is not the typical look. I think that used to make me feel very defensive, and it used to make me feel like people were questioning not just where I was from, but kind of how much a part of my family I actually was. And that was very hard for me to take repeatedly, because I'm very close with my family here. They've never made me feel that I was any less a part of it than anyone else. And so I think, again, the adoption has just really made me feel much more at ease with being able to respond to comments like that and just say, yeah, you know, I'm adopted, so that's why I look different to my family.
Right.
And that's fine, and I can move on from that much easier.
That is interesting. You're making me think about transracial, interracial adoptees who are constantly facing those kinds of questions. Well, you don't look like your adoptive parents. Where are you from, so to speak? And these questions they get that, I don't know, it just seems hard. It seems hard. But like you say, you're able to give an answer, well, I'm adopted. And you're giving us, what I love about being with you now in this conversation is you're giving us another side of adoption for an adoptee. And I just find it fascinating. There are parallels, right? There are things that resonate that you're saying with the adoptee that has a very different story. But at the same time, it's interesting how there are things that will still jive, still be like in sync with your experience. So let's talk about the adding a parent. I love that. Adding a parent and not replacing a parent is something that's huge. So for you, you're still in contact with your biological father, I'm guessing?
I was until fairly recently, and then not to do with the adoption, but for other reasons, I haven't been in contact with him now.
Okay. So when you say adding a parent, it sounds to me like you acknowledge the fact that he's your biological father. And then the father that adopted you is just another family member added. And I just imagine that your outlook on it that way makes you feel good.
It really did. And I'll speak kind of at the time and within the months after it, when I was still in touch with both of them. I was telling myself initially that this adoption is something that's just for me and my identity. It doesn't have to affect my biological dad because it's not even happening in the same country as him. So, you know, I don't even have to tell him, because I was really nervous about it. And I was thinking, as much as we haven't always had an easy relationship, I don't want to hurt this person. So I was conscious of that, but keeping it in was not really doing my mental health much good. And, you know, I feel this adoption is really central to who I am, as I've said. And so I have started discussing it openly in the last few months and giving my adopted dad the acknowledgement I feel he deserves as my parent, because he was more than a step parent in so many ways, I feel. When I was younger, I would say too, he wasn't trying to replace my biological dad. I really want to make that point because, again, just thinking about other conversations I've had within this space, it's kind of come to my attention that not everyone, but some adoptees who were adopted at birth feel maybe that they were kind of taken when they wouldn't have wanted to be from biological parents. I just really want to make clear that that's not, you know, there was no point in time at which I feel my stepdad was trying to kind of take me away from my biological dad or anything like that. It was more that we kind of built this relationship separately from what I had with my biological dad. And it wasn't because anyone wanted it to be superior or exclusively, you know, something that could exist between the two of us. It was very organic and it just existed in its own kind of world. And I think that was able to happen because I didn't have always a great relationship with my biological dad. And also because my stepdad and mom actually were not able to have more children. And so I think we did kind of fill a void for each other during a time. And so that brought us very, very close. I understand. I've also had a miscarriage myself in the last year. So I know from his perspective how awful that is and that you can't replace, you know, a child you've lost or never had. But I know what I can be to my adopted dad now is another child. And in the same way I felt at the time that he could be another parent to me.
That was beautifully stated. Thank you for sharing all of that. What I'm thinking right now is those people that were raised by a step parent and the step parent during childhood at some point adopted them, and how that was such a meaningful experience for them. It just meant everything. And they knew their biological father, and for whatever reason, that person wasn't in their life and didn't even come close to what the step-parent was doing and showing up and being in their life. And then the adoption taking place just took it to the next level, right? Like, it was just one of the best gifts that that parent could have given that child. That part of adoption, right, is a big deal. Like, I know that, and I've heard too many people who've never been, you know, separated from their family of origin and all of that. Like, they know their beginnings and all of that. But that adoption piece that showed up in their life, big deal. That's what I hear you saying. And I think that it is important to include this in the conversation when we talk about adoption, because it's just another way of looking at it and understanding, like, what adoption entails. It entails far more than just, like, my situation. You know, it's bigger than that. And we can all stand to grow and learn about what it means for everybody and how it's showing up in their life. So I appreciate that. You're a writer, and I am excited about learning more about this book, your latest book. It's going to be released before this airs, I'm pretty sure. So the release date is in March. And the title of it, 38 Days of Rain. So talk to us about your latest book.
So the book is, I don't want to say, it's definitely not based on my own experiences, but I would say inspired by my feelings on the adoption part of my experience, certainly, as well as some issues around infertility too. So I was actually told around the same time I was being adopted that I would not be able to conceive children. And so as I was going through the process and, you know, sitting in family courts and being adopted myself, I was also thinking, or maybe I'm going to find myself here again as the prospective parent in the future, if this is the case, then I think about 2 years later, almost exactly, I fell pregnant very unexpectedly, which sadly was not a successful pregnancy. And in order to kind of cope at the end of that experience with all of these things that I felt were very much linked, I wrote this book, I created this fictional character, and I kind of brought together the experience of childlessness and, you know, multiple parents, step parents, and then becoming adopted parents in this story, where the main character finds herself both adoptee and prospective, you know, adoptive parent, and then going through this whole health and immigration journey at the same time. So there's a lot there. But yeah, it was honestly very cathartic to explore these issues through almost a kind of separate from myself lens.
Well, I'm excited when it's released to get a copy and read it. When I talk to writers who go on to publish, it can be daunting. How does it feel to be on the other side of this project? This is huge, and congratulations.
Thank you. It was very emotional working on it. And I actually think I made myself quite unwell towards the end, writing about particularly the pregnancy loss or infertility side of things, because it was so much to kind of relive that, even through a fictional character's eyes. But I think it's also really gratifying to kind of see this story exist. And, you know, I have a proof copy of the book now. It's something that I can hold in my hands and say, here it is, and I did this and I made this. And it doesn't erase any of the things that I experienced, but it definitely helped me to make sense of a lot of them and to kind of to draw a line and be able to move on from them.
You're such a lovely lady. I get to see your face during this recording, which is always so nice. And I just enjoy being in your company and hearing you speak about your lived experience. And I understand that you're going to read something today for us.
Yes. So this is from a passage about the culture clash that the main character, Andrula, grew up facing between her biological mother and father's homes. In Andrula's primary home, there were no rules about elbows on the dinner table. She wasn't taught to leave the last morsel in every bowl or to knock on doors before entering and then speak in a low voice. Nor was she told that she should say she was fine, thank you, if anyone asked. Her mother cooked Greek food, lots of it when people came over, and the more comfortable they made themselves at her table, the better. To leave a crumb uneaten was an insult. Everyone was welcome in every room, and no one spoke in a low voice. If they were ever less than fine, they said so. No one looked alarmed when Andrula failed to do the courteous thing and lie about her well-being. She, her mother, and her stepfather said how they were truthfully. They didn't thank each other for asking, as if to take an interest was to do someone a favor. What kind of message did that send? For her father to act affronted by behavior that she didn't understand as rude. Andrula tried to be comfortable with him in the way she knew how, and by comparison he seemed cold. Perhaps their ways of being were incompatible, and they had never stood a chance.
Thank you for accepting my invitation to read today and taking the time to have this conversation with me. I'm just so glad our paths crossed. I think that you, as a part of the community, have so much to offer, and I'm open to learning from you and from others whose experience is like yours. So I just appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed hearing Ava's perspective and how each of us can choose as adults what taking agency is all about. Thank you, Ava, for having this conversation with me. I look forward to staying in touch with you and learning more about how your lived experience is helping other adoptees. You're likely to give them food for thought when it comes to what decisions they might make to empower their life. All of us are free to choose as adults, even when past choices didn't serve us in the best ways. This episode concludes this season, and I hope you will join me for season 11, which starts Tuesday, April 9th. I kick the season off with a returning guest who has discoveries before, during, and since the publication of her memoir. The journey and adventure in adoptee land continues. I want to thank every guest for saying yes to a conversation with me, every participant, especially in the early days, and the audience for listening to some of the most extraordinary people I've had the pleasure of meeting. If you're an adoptee and would like to share your adoption journey, visit JenniferDianeGolston.com. If you like Once Upon a Time in Adoptee Land, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Follow and or give, hopefully, a 5-star rating so others can find it too. During the course of your day, I trust you will tell at least one friend or someone who you believe might find value in it, because word of mouth is still the very best way for the show to grow. Thank you for being here.